time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires.
Today, we've got a special guest, a seasoned political operative to help us unpack all that has occurred. His name is Adam Green. He's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, a grassroots organization with 1 million members that engages in electoral and issue advocacy work with a focus on economic populism and democracy issues. Thanks for being here, Adam. I want to jump right in on the populism. How does a guy who is a billionaire who has a golden toilet take on the moniker of being a populist, especially when his number one accomplishment in his first term was giving billionaires and himself an enormous tax cut?
Well, we're all probably sick of the word vibes to describe the 2024 campaign, but there's a reason it's been said so much. You know, even though everything you said is true, here's a guy who shows up at McDonald's, rides around arguably ill-fatedly on a garbage truck, shows up at a plant that's outsourcing jobs back in 2016, and applies to his rhetoric every single day things that feel like he's speaking at a gut level to workers. And one of the problems that Democrats need to solve is, how do we actually have authentic populists who working class people don't believe are just reading from a teleprompter or speaking past their issues, but are really leaning into their issues from the gut? Right? I think John Tester in Montana, a guy who still tills his own land on his farm, and independent Dan Osborne, who almost picked up a Senate seat unexpectedly in Nebraska and is a mechanic, ran as independent, didn't want the Democratic Party brand. These are people who really should be the types of faces we look for as a Democratic Party in the future.
Yeah, it was a bit of a heartbreaker locally to see three candidates here in congressional races in newly redrawn districts, Adam, Rebecca Cook, a waitress, Kristen Lierley, an OBGYN, and Peter Barca, who is basically the epitome of a centrist and a guy that works across the aisle, and not a one of them were able to pull off a win. But I think at least here locally, there was some urgency and interest in what these people were saying, because again, they sound normal. They sound like someone that you would talk to sitting next to you on a bar stool or in a house of worship. Again, people seem to trust Donald Trump on the economy, despite the fact that basically every single data point indicates that we shouldn't trust him. 23 Nobel economists said, don't trust this guy in his economic policies. Why do you think people continue to trust him? Is it simply because Democrats talk strangely and condescendingly to people, and we've got to get better candidates and speak more plainly and inclusively? Like, what's going on with the trust for Donald Trump, which seems irrational to me?
Yeah. Well, first, just one note on your Wisconsin point. It's unfortunate when good candidates with good messaging who have authentic brands do fall because of the top of the ticket and really the Democratic Party brand at large. I think Tammy Baldwin had a unique enough brand of her own that she was able to withstand the tide. But someone like Rebecca Cook, who, as you said, was a waitress, and you know, she was just introducing herself to voters. She wasn't a pre-known brand. And it's really unfortunate in a year like this when that happens. So I just want to acknowledge that sometimes there's nothing you can do when the brand itself at the top of the ticket is broken, and the person at the top, Kamala Harris in this case, wasn't able to really change it. You know, that leads directly to your next point about Trump. I mean, here's a guy who most people on a vibes level saw on TV being a good business person, right? I mean, that, even though it was a fictional version of Donald Trump, is the story that many people have in their heads. He is a person who, like him or not, understands showmanship and symbolism. And, you know, in a world where people like you and myself might be reading very wonky articles about how many trillions of dollars might be in the Build Back Better proposal, Donald Trump is not speaking on that level. He is just speaking from the gut. And I'll tell you, first of all, we worked very closely with the White House this year and successfully got a lot of words in the teleprompter of Joe Biden during the State of the Union and Kamala Harris on the campaign trail, things about fighting billionaires, taxing them, things about taking on corporate price gouging in groceries, things like protecting and expanding Social Security benefits. But that extra layer of just people hearing an authentic messenger is the thing we have to solve next. And having gone door to door in Michigan and Omaha, Nebraska, and talking to people at the doors, it was so clear to me that many of the things I focus on in life, and you know, a lot of us focus on, aren't breaking through to the people that we need to go out to the polls. And some guy who my door knock interrupted his Dungeons and Dragons game, and he called the economy trash and blamed Joe Biden. You know, that's years and years of
programming,
failed branding on our part.
Yeah, and failed branding on our part. Failed communication on our part. You know, just 4 years ago, right, in 20, Donald Trump lost voters making less than $50,000 a year by, I think, nearly 10 points to Joe Biden. And on Tuesday, he won that demographic by a percentage point. I mean, this is the sort of data point illustrating your anecdote about the person playing Dungeons and Dragons and saying the economy is trash and it's Joe Biden's fault. What should we take away from that shift? And what should do you know what the branding should be, Adam? Have you solved this entire problem for us? Please enlighten me so that I can say things correctly.
I would probably join you in being very sleep deprived yesterday. And, you know, all early takes today are just a down payment on lots of thoughts that we'll have together over the next, you know, days, yes, weeks, months. So with that giant caveat, you know, we've seen so many examples of Democrats over the years just not getting the branding question. And, you know, one of our critiques of Harris this cycle, even though we worked with her extremely closely in her campaign, is if you think about the closing argument, right, the Harris campaign was very clear that they had a three-legged stool. They had abortion, they had democracy, they had the economy. They went to Texas to underscore her position on abortion, right? It was newsworthy because why is she in Texas? Oh, it's only because of their extreme abortion ban. She went to the Ellipse to underscore January 6th and the economy thing. But both of those, not the economy, the democracy issue, yeah, both of those were, yes, really smart moves. Where was the similar moment, or I would argue moments over the last several months, that were driving a fight around the economy? Why didn't she have a rally in front of the headquarters of a corporate price gouger or in front of a billionaire's office, an event in a grocery store, things that would allow her to actually break through on the gut level populism? Well, there was actually a fairly damning article today by Franklin Foer in The Atlantic that pretty much revealed that her brother-in-law, Tony West, who's a top lobbyist for Uber, had a big role in kind of honing and paring down her language, taking on big corporations and billionaires. And that's a real problem, right? So they thought they could coast by on just democracy and abortion and campaign with billionaires like Mark Cuban and, you know, kind of get a buy on fighting the fight. Well, meanwhile, Dan Osborne did 14 points better than her in Nebraska by every single day, every event, every almost word out of his mouth, taking on corporate greed and, yes, the fat cats. And that's a lesson for us. We need to have not just have policy positions, but a strategy of picking smart fights so there's commotion around them, story arcs,
yes,
sagas, drama, and people are actually excited to tune into that drama and give us credit.
We need some kayfabe, like to borrow from wrestling. Like we need a storyline that is planned out with clear villains, and the villains that all Americans agree are villains are freaking billionaires. They don't care if it's Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, right? Like, and I've made the argument repeatedly that once you hit a certain level of wealth, it's like amoral, right? It's not immoral, it's just amoral. It doesn't have party anymore because at a certain level of wealth, the wealth seeks more wealth and power. It's the only thing that it can consume because you've consumed everything else that you could possibly want. So I totally agree with you on that. I remember that, I think it was the New York Times, there was a small article that came out that said that those meetings were happening. I cannot wait to read this piece in The Atlantic. I'm going to do it as soon as I get off the air today, Adam. And the reporting was indicating that some of these meetings had happened or that the messaging had gotten softened, right, around this very constellation of issues in a way that some around the campaign were frankly uncomfortable with, because, yep, those are the issues that truly are not partisan. It's the thing that brings frankly, the middle class together, right? And of course, all the stinking money in politics. It's a two-headed hydra, right? And it grows more heads. But to get back here, there's going to be, I think, an instinct to ask Democrats to actually pivot right or right. to like make policy adjustments. What's your thinking on this, Adam?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question. And you mentioned these things aren't partisan. One challenge I would give to all of your viewers and listeners is to push back relentlessly on any conversation that involves the words left, right, and center, because those are such broken terms, right? Over 80% of people want to tax billionaires more. 90% want to protect Social Security. You could say those are left positions on some ideological spectrum, I guess, but that's where the center of the country is.
Right.
And they try to marginalize us by talking about right and left, right? Some of the people who were working hardest to give more giveaways to pharma and Wall Street during the Biden economic fights were called centrists and moderates on TV. No, those are like corporate fringe people doing stuff that nobody wants, right? So we need to redefine the language to be less left versus right, more top versus bottom, more elites versus working class. One example I would just put into the conversation as a kind of a talking point in these conversations with the people I have around their dinner table or kitchen table with other people is, you know, the 1999 Wall Street deregulation was bipartisan in Washington, D.C. Democrats and Republicans, right, who took bank money, corporate money, were thrilled to vote for this thing. Well, it was also bipartisan, unpopular in the country, which led to both the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement.
Our guest today, Adam Green. He is the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, a grassroots organization that focuses on economic populism and democracy issues. Let's get right back into it. You and I, I love it when I have guests on like yourself, Adam, and we've never talked about this before, but I can hear an expert helping to confirm some of my gut instincts about things. So thank you. We were talking about the fact that using left, right, center, conservative, progressive, when we're talking about particular policies or thinking of the political environment in these days in those terms is limiting, and it will not help Democrats try to break through. What do you think are the issues that can help Democrats break through and that doesn't involve effectively abandoning the core values or tenets of the Democratic Party? Yesterday, I said, we're not wrong. We have just forgotten how to talk to everybody like regular people and with the respect that people who we disagree with actually deserve. It's really challenging, but we're not wrong. It is a message and messenger challenge.
Absolutely. Is a message and messenger challenge. You use the word issues, which is a really important differentiation from a lot of the labels that are out there. So yes, left, right, center. I'm glad you mentioned even progressive. There's even brands that are on certain things like Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, that I think we just have to be willing to sometimes recognize when there's a broken brand out there, right? Green New Deal, this is my opinion here, but was on track to be a really good brand until a ridiculous rollout, including an accidentally leaked early version of it that led to it being about cow farts and stuff like that, right?
I saw that and I nearly died. I was like, oh my gosh, unforced error.
Unforced error, and we don't have to resuscitate the brand. You know, I've heard politicians say to me, I'm gonna support so many ideas in the Green New Deal, but I'm not gonna embrace the Green New Deal as a brand. It's like, fine, that's what we need, right? We had one person in the Midwest call it the Midwest Marshall Plan. Okay, sure, if that floats your boat, we don't need a purity test on the brand. And just to just really drill this point, I was struck by one of the earliest examples of this during the big healthcare fight during the Obama years. We were a lead group pushing for the public option, which at that point was the left flank, if one's going to use that term, of the healthcare debate happening in Congress. And the New York Times poll showed that over 70% of Americans supported a public option. It was explained to them. This included 50% of Republican voters wanted a publicly run government insurance company to compete against private insurance. It was called government run right in the description.
Yep.
The same poll, if you look in the demographics, show only 20% of people call themselves liberal, right? Mm-hmm. And we've done some testing, progressive liberal, it's always 20%. So I don't care if someone doesn't join the Progressive Caucus, but wants to take on big insurance companies and big pharma. Sure, there's actually, our organization has worked with tons of them who just won in red to blue districts who didn't want the word progressive on their name because it's just a misunderstood brand. I mean, you can ask me, well, you work for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Thank you. We might have to some rebranding to do, because really, like, these labels are hurting us.
Yes.
The ideas, even a government-run insurance program, helps us. So that competes against private insurance, to be clear in that case. So, yes. You know, once you recognize that, it partly solves the values problem, because we're not abandoning a lot of the issue positions. We're abandoning bad descriptions and things that kind of don't speak correctly in the ears of people when they hear the shorthand, right? But and then marrying that to the earlier point we were talking about, a lot of this is the gut, right? When I was thinking about this recently, when Bernie Sanders talked about Medicare for All, he wasn't talking about a 200-page bill.
Yes.
He wasn't trying to describe a plan. He was giving an us versus them narrative of the little guy being screwed over by the big guy. It all boiled up to that. And Medicare for All was almost a supporting detail in that narrative, not the other way around. So I feel like that's just what we need to have, right? So if politicians are inclined to talk wonky stuff, they shouldn't be our politicians. And
yes.
And if politicians also just aren't comfortable with the ideas enough to have a real human conversation with people, they shouldn't be our politicians. So going back to the messenger and message, and sorry, I'll stop talking after this. You know, Kamala Harris, even if one believes, I really have zero interest in like bashing Kamala Harris. Even if one believes that she ran the best campaign that was possible with her. We all remember in 2019, 2020, she was the very first senator to endorse Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill, right? She saw a political opportunity in that. And then when pressed one iota to defend it, she couldn't. And then she reversed her position, right?
Yes.
We don't need that. We don't need that, right? The reason she was reading from a teleprompter about corporate price gouging was it wasn't in her gut to talk about it. She couldn't make the case to talk about it. And therefore, it wasn't in her gut to say to her press people, wait a second, why am I talking about democracy and abortion but not having any events on challenging corporate power, right? We need politicians who live it on a gut level, can communicate it on a gut level, and the policy will backfill itself later when we're in governing mode.
Got to start with the ideas, and it is us versus them, right? It is all of us, regardless of party. This is, again, the fight, I think, of a generation to look at both money and politics, a constitutional amendment to fix that and start with a fairer tax code that works for the middle class folks. That is Adam Green. He is the co-founder of the soon to be renamed Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.